My special guest in the studio is a saxophonist, composer and band leader. He's composed music in a wide variety of the performing arts, including dance, theatre, films and even silent films. He leads several ensembles here in Australia, including the one we just heard, Microscopic Septet, the Coolerators, the Greasy Chicken Orchestra, as well as having worked with artists such as John Zorn, Bobby Previtt, Wayne Horvitz and many more. Philip Johnston, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thank you, Frank. It's great to be here.
Philip, how did you become involved in music?
I was actually born in Chicago, but I grew up in New York from the age of two.
Okay.
So to simplify things, I usually say I'm from New York.
So who were your formative influences?
Well, I grew up starting as a musician by listening to musicians from basically several different extremes of the spectrum. So I loved early jazz, the 1920s, particularly Sidney Bechet and early Duke Ellington, Cy Oliver, Fletcher Henderson, that kind of stuff, Jelly Roll Morton. And I also loved people like Anthony Braxton and the Art Ensemble of Chicago. And then in between, I was really strongly influenced, and still am today, by Thelonious Monk and Herbie Nichols and people like that.
Do you think there's a common element of those particular eras in jazz that is tied together that is attractive for you?
I do, absolutely. And I guess because I consider myself primarily a composer, the early era of jazz, I think, was just an incredibly rich time for composition. The compositions in the first 20, 30 years of jazz are just, to me, still astonishing. The work of Jelly Roll Morton is equal to any classical composer that you can name. And then you had a few decades where it was really all about the soloist. And though there were a lot of great composers and great arrangers, the focus kind of shifted to people who had great technique and individual styles and so on, which I still think is wonderful. And then after that, it shifted back to more of an ensemble approach. This is a total generalization, of course, but I think there's an element of truth to it. So groups like the Art Ensemble of Chicago and the group of people that I kind of came up with, some of whom you mentioned, the emphasis was really much more on the ensemble and the composition than the soloist per se. Yeah, the people involved are great soloists, but it's more of an ensemble group. Something that in the years since I've lived here I find is very Australian, I think. While there's fantastic soloists in Australia, there's much more of a feeling of the importance of the group and collectivity, which I really respond to a lot here.
At the same time, do you think that sort of shift also correlates with a shift to the academic side of the music at the expense of the entertaining side of the music?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I have always really emphasized the entertaining side of the music that I do. I don't know if you are saying that in response to something in particular, but people always write about the Microscopic Septet, how there's a lot of humor in our music and it's very entertaining and performative. And when I see jazz musicians up there looking like a bunch of undertakers, it kind of always bums me out a little bit. So with a lot of my music, I try to bring back that aspect to it. At the same time, I think jazz in this day and age is also a vehicle for serious composition, and I think it can contain any extreme of complex ideas. However, I don't think the two things should be mutually exclusive, so I think you can go out and listen to some really challenging music and still have a sense of humor about it and have a great time.
Well, there's certainly plenty of sense of humor in your music. At Peace with a Mop, I just start laughing when I hear a title like that.
Well, people often comment on my titles. That particular one, yes, I did make it up, but it's very much inspired by the film. Of course, all the titles on the Page of Madness CD come from the film, but they're not literally from the film, because one of the things that's remarkable about the film Page of Madness is it has no title cards. So it's a very expressionistic film. It's told totally in images. That being said, those titles are my assessment, my sort of shorthand for what's happening in different sections of the film. So one of the tunes is called There's a Riot Going On, because there's a riot in the mental institution where the film is set. I don't think the original filmmakers would have chosen a title like that. But some of my titles from the Microscopic Septet, one of them that's remarked upon a lot is The Waltz of the Recently Punished Catholic Schoolboys. People take that as a point in the direction of humor, which I embrace completely.
At what stage of your career did you develop an interest in composing music for the visual arts?
Well, I've always loved films, and I've always loved film music. And when I was first starting to play my own music for people, people would always say, your music sounds like film music. And that was because, not just because of the film, but I just loved the music of Nino Rota and Ennio Morricone and Bernard Herrmann. And that went into the music that I did without film. Because of that reaction that people had, people started asking me to write music for films and theater, and I was just drawn to it naturally. But I do love the collaborative process, being part of something bigger than yourself and working closely with other people in other disciplines, because I love film, I love art, I love writing, I love comedy, and all of those disciplines overlap, I think.
Philip, the act of spontaneously composing music for a silent film from the 1920s in the year 2017, we're not only bridging artistic and cultural generations here, but also giving you significant sort of artistic license as to how the individual viewer might view or interpret the original film.
Mm.
I mean, I know on Saturday night, for example, the listeners on Saturday night won't have access to view this silent film.
Yes.
At the same time. But I guess your original concept here, when it was launched in the States those years ago, would have.
Yes, absolutely.
So how do you feel about, I guess, that level of responsibility you have in interpreting something so old and bringing it into the next millennium?
Well, that's a very, very interesting question. We could speak at great length about that, because I think it's a really fascinating topic. Let me see, how can I be incredibly brief and succinct and pithy? Even by saying succinct and pithy, I was not succinct and pithy. I think music has a tremendous effect on how people perceive film. And one of the liberating things about silent film is that because the films have already been out in the world, now, as part of our kind of reinventative artistic world that we're part of, they're available to be recontextualized. What I find is so many times when you see modern silent film scores, they don't really attempt to reinvent the film very much. They use modern music, but they basically reinforce the same old relationship between music and film. Fast music for the fast scene, sad music for the sad scene. I like to ask, what happens in our brain when you see the Keystone Cops running and you see hear slow and melancholy music? How does that twist our brains in a different way? Now, some people may say, well, I'm overstepping my bounds by, quote-unquote, going against the wishes of the original filmmaker. But the reality is, we don't know what the wishes of the original filmmaker are. We can never see a silent film the way people in 1910, 1920 saw them. So anything we see is, by definition, a reinvention. And I say, take advantage of that to create a new art form, which is a form of time travel in which there's a collaboration across 100 years between a filmmaker from the 1920s and a composer from the 20s, 10s, I'm not sure what this decade is called. That's my short answer.
And of course, there's an interesting symmetry there because, I mean, the original silent film has a communicative connection to the individual viewer, and the same thing's happening, will be happening on Saturday night for the individual listener.
That's right. I think that one of the things about silent film that draws me to it is it's so much more wild and complex and expressive and unexpected and passionate and melodramatic than a lot of people say film took a step back for 20 years when sound was added. Well, I hope that the music that we play on Saturday night is going to be just as dramatic and just as surprising and just as humorous and entertaining.
Now, the plot of this particular movie, Page of Madness, it's a little gruesome and a little tragic. Can you briefly describe the plot?
Well, that's a very interesting question also. Great questions tonight. Because I'm probably one of the relatively few people who can, and the reason is the film, it's very abstract, and while it does have a plot, it's very difficult to figure out just from watching the film what it is. And I did a lot of research talking to people who are knowledgeable about Japanese culture and Japanese history to figure out what the story was. That being said, I'll tell you what it is. So a man and a woman have had a tragic episode. I think maybe their child has died and the wife feels responsible for it, and she's confined to a mental institution. The husband, in order to be near his wife, takes a job as a janitor in the mental institution with the plan of trying to help her escape. But in the time that he's in there working, and his communication which is difficult because she's quite mad, he eventually comes to accept the situation and he decides to stay on as a janitor to be his wife, even though he knows that she's mad and they won't escape. That's why the last piece is called At Peace with a Mop.
Have the band members seen the silent movie? Have you discussed certain elements of the plot and the scenes and so forth with any of the band members?
I performed that score with the film at the 2009 Sydney Film Festival at the State Theatre for about 650 people. And the band then was Lloyd Swanton, Daryl Pratt, and Chris Abrahams. Lloyd and Chris being from the band The Necks. And I tried to get that band, but Chris is actually playing the same night at another venue. But Lloyd and Daryl have played the whole film score with the film, so they're very conversant with it. Everybody else will not have seen it, and they'll be reacting purely to the musical instructions that are written into the score. So the transposing or transmuting the original score into the piece for 12 instruments kind of gets away from the film, except for the compositional elements, and takes the ideas and the structures of the way the piece is composed and makes a new piece out of them. I'll give you an example. The first 3 minutes of the film is a series of very short cuts in the film. Just very abstract, bang, bang, bang. And I have it organized so that the combinations of musicians, this is in the original, change every time there's a cut. So they're very short little bits. What they play is completely improvised, and what's composed is who's playing and when they switch. Now, when I made the big piece, I spread those across 12 instruments, and I kept the same structure, but there's no picture. So the rationale for them changing so often is gone, and it's given birth to the structure, which has maybe, I think, 30 or 31 different combinations of instruments in the first 3 minutes.
Hence your need for the stopwatch, which we were talking about off air.
And my need for great musicians who, I mean, when you look at this list of people, you know that whatever they play is going to be great, and it'll make me look like a terrific composer.
And we're talking about Peter Farrow, alto saxophone as well, Sandy Evans, tenor, Andrew Robson, alto, Alex Silver, trombone, along with James Greening, Darrell Pratt, is he playing the vibes?
Yes.
And Lloyd Swanton, bass, Hamish Stewart, drums, Paul Cutland, probably, what, bass clarinet?
Bass clarinet. That's right. And the last person is Jason Noble, playing clarinet.
What's the most satisfying feedback you've had in relation to this particular project?
The best part of it for me, and this is from the original performance in New York, and I know it's going to be true on the night, is the community. The people, the musicians coming together and appreciating each other. There's not that many times when that many musicians in jazz come together and play together and kind of appreciate each other. So it's really kind of it's a very serious piece of music, but it's also a big party.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's nothing more pleasurable than musicians appreciating each other.
And if they're enjoying the gig, that communication crosses over to
the audience. Usually enjoys it too. I know myself as an audience member, when I feel that the musicians are having a great time, I'm usually having a great time too.
Philip Johnston, thanks very much for joining me tonight.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you for having me. Great questions tonight.